Welcome back to another week in the NBA. This is the Mojo Sports Network weekly NBA show. I'm your host, Alexander Jay. I've got with me Mr. Tom Dev from Melbourne, Mr. Yuri Bilsich from Perth. Look, we got a lot of return viewers. A couple of weeks ago, we were 56th on the Australian basketball podcast charts. That was ahead of Thanasis Antetokounmpo. Last week, we were down to 194th. So that really hurts. If you're a returning listener, give us a five-star rating because I think I figured out that's what pumps up those charts. Tom Dev, how are you, mate?
Well, I've had a bit of a long, hard day today just sitting back and thinking, you got Jokic finals MVP last year or you got, Alexander Jay finals MVP last night. What's the more impressive performance? I couldn't decide.
Of course, you're referencing my monster 11.12 rebound game in the lowest division possible to play basketball in Townsville. But we finally got over the hump. We won the grand final after, I think, 14 seasons of trying across 7 years. And unfortunately, that means promotion to a tougher league. So it's bittersweet. How are you?
Champion's a champion.
I'm playing Ron Artest's champion all day today. That's the best. Look, we're getting off the rails early. Yuri, take us back on the rails, please. How are you?
Oh, going well, thank you, Alex. And saw your photo last night too on the WhatsApp chat. And hey, it's reward, hey.
You know
what? The big trophy, right?
Maybe I'll make that the podcast photo when this one goes up later tonight, so all the beautiful listeners can see. Yeah, look, you know it was going to be my game. I'm a big man. I'm 6'2". Can't shoot to save my life. Nailed the first three free throws they put me to the line for. So I knew I was in for something special. But let's just get onto today's show because we've got a lot to talk about. We've got the wonderful Bucks-Lakers game that went to double overtime today. We're going to talk about Houston's incredible run of late and what's making them stand out post-All-Star. Where Oklahoma City might end up, they got punched in the mouth by Milwaukee a couple of days ago, what they might do in the postseason and the offseason. And then the three-way scramble for sixth in the West. We're talking all the West for some reason today. Between, who is it? It's Dallas, it's the Phoenix Suns, and the Sacramento Kings, who are the most confusing team in the league. We're going to chat about that as well. But starting us off, for news of the week, Yuri Bilsich, what is your biggest piece of news?
Oh, definitely the biggest news, Alex, was from last Friday here in Australia, where the news from the New Orleans Pelicans is that Brandon Ingram hyperextended his left knee in their loss to the Orlando Magic and will be out for the next 2 weeks. So that's roughly 7 games the Pelicans are playing without him. And they've managed to weather the storm without B.I. on the floor. They've been starting Trey Murphy in his place. And although they lost today to the Thunder, they're in a very tight jostling spot for that fourth seed in the West with the Los Angeles Clippers. So it's interesting times ahead, but it's one they haven't really had to face adversity without Ingram this season. But it's a good test for them. And I think just how they sort of shape the offense a little bit is going to be really interesting because we've seen a lot of Zion playing the point forward and it's definitely been paying dividends to
having
sort of a branching offense, right?
He'll make a mention in performance of the week at the end of the show. Tom, any thoughts on the Pels?
Not really. I mean, they looked pretty impressive today, although OKC somehow managed to just climb back when they seemed dead in that game. My only real thought is I don't know if CJ McCollum's going to be their guy. He just somehow always ends up getting the ball in the clutch situations and he never kind of comes through. You know, there's a reason why they called it Dame time in Portland and not CJ time. I think he needs to maybe just become a bit more of a facilitator when the clock's ticking down in the end of the fourth, opposed to taking those tough shots.
You don't think we can work some branding into that? It could be the McCollum minute, or I don't know. We can workshop that. All right, sticking with you, Tom, your biggest news of the week is?
Well, you got the Pelicans who are right at the heels of the Clippers who have, the sky has fallen for them month and a bit. Particularly, the last week, I mean, they've lost 4 of their last 6 games with their only 2 wins coming against Portland. So that's nothing special at all. They lost to the 76ers at home, where the 76ers put up 41 points in the first quarter and they got the doors blown off them, which, you normally when you get those early afternoon games on the West Coast, it's not a surprise that one of the teams is a bit sluggish, but my God, I didn't get up for this game. I really value my sleep a little bit more than getting up at 4 a.m. to watch the Clippers and 76ers without Embiid, but when I woke up and saw the result, I was shocked. They lost then the second night of that back-to-back against the Pacers, which, again, was just surprising considering they also had all their guys for that game. I mean, recently they've lost to the Bucks twice, the Timberwolves, the Pelicans, the Pacers, and the 76ers. They've only had really one win against the playoff team in the last month, which was the Timberwolves. And that was like 89-88. It's not like they've had injury concerns. I mean, they've had Westbrook, but he's back now. And look, yes, some people can argue that Westbrook's actually really valuable to this team.
I
But at the
think I
end of the
made that
day,
argument on this pod, yeah.
you did. But at the end of the day, when you got Harden, Paul George, and Kawhi Leonard all out there, you should be beating a 76ers team without Embiid at home, especially. The Mavs are only one win behind them. I mean, they're in the battle with the moment with the Pelicans for the four seed. I'd argue home court doesn't really matter in this series. I mean, it's what the Smoothie King Center or the Clippers, with Lakers fans who have nothing better to do than show up to their games and boo them in the playoffs. Look, I'm not gonna say I'm taking a victory lap because I have been on the Clippers saying that they're not a real threat. Since the moment they made the Harden trade, I'm not ready to completely declare myself as a winner. However, it feels like they've put the Q in the rack mentally, and they haven't proven anything in the playoffs. It doesn't feel like they can afford to just put the Q in the rack and go, in 3 weeks' time, we'll pick this up and we'll be good to go again. And I don't know. I thought maybe 3 months ago I was wrong and they were the real deal. And now I'm kind of thinking maybe I'm right. And they're just not up to that Denver OKC Timberwolves tier that we've seen in the West this season.
Yeah, it's hard to say what's been happening with the Clippers. I mean, Coach Ty Lue came out yesterday, I believe, and said he called the team soft. He used the S word, I think, to this is how Zach Lowe likes to put it, the S word. They're only 2.5 games up from being in the play, and that's how bad they've fallen over the last 20 game stretch. So, Yuri, I don't know if you've got any thoughts on the Clippers, or I can move on to another story.
I think with the tiebreaker with the Pelicans and Clippers, Alex, that's going to come really pivotal now because the Pelicans won that season series. They took three or
That's
four, and if
why
they
I've got
do
you on
end
this
up
show.
with the win-loss records, right, that's going to be significant. But no one's catching those top three teams out west with the Nuggets, Thunder, and Wolves. That's basically a clean slate, 1-2-3 podium finish. It's whoever finishes four and five between the Pels and Clippers, and whoever finishes sixth, right, which we'll get to shortly between the Mavericks, Kings and the Suns. But the thing though with the Mavs though, they hold the tiebreakers. Well, they hold the tiebreak against Phoenix, but Sacramento holds the tiebreak over Dallas, having won two of three. But it's interesting, right, with the Clippers, because there was one play they were playing Portland, right? Those sequence, that mini series in Portland. And James Harden was asked about his block shot on Kawhi Leonard, but what he said was to just really light up the mood. And those are sort of the things you need, right? When you're sort of in a bit of a funk as the Clippers are currently dealing with at this stage. And just to sort of light up the mood and get everyone back to just enjoying the game once again. And yes, Westbrook is back and he missed basically what, almost 4 weeks with that broken hand they sustained against the Wizards back on March 1. That'll help a ton, right? And we've seen that even when Westbrook did volunteer to come off the bench and the Clippers offense definitely hit higher gear with him at running that second unit too, because they've had to start Bones Highland there, and basically Bones was almost, you want to say, non-factor and playing very minimal minutes whatsoever. But yeah, you don't want to be slumping with 10 or 11 games left to go in the regular season, and whatever happens with Dallas and their crazy run, having won what, 8 of their last 10 games, you don't want to slide down to that sixth seed and end up facing the Timberwolves, which would be a pretty good first round series anyway, considering what those two teams produced in that playing game a couple of years ago. But yeah, I just don't think there's too many worries to be concerned about if you're a Clippers fan as well. It's just about, yeah, the basics. That's all it is with this team.
I'm going to start hitting a couple of smaller things. So jump in if you've got something to say before we get to a scandal that rocketed through the NBA a couple of days ago. Apologies to show regular Jack Brophy, Detroit. They lost Stanley Amoedo to an ankle fracture. It's a bad end of the season for Detroit. They're on a 7-game losing streak. They've taken worst team in the league back from the Washington Wizards, unfortunately. They're signing guys all over the place. I think they've actually, I don't have the stat in front of me. I think they've actually used the most members in the starting lineup this season through to injury. I think they were close 1 or 2 games ago, and then they lost to Mwede. So sucks to be Jack. Sorry. Jrue Holiday's got a nerve injury, a potential nerve injury for the Boston Celtics. I don't know if you've been paying attention to this one, Tom. Dealing with a dead arm, is that right?
I will have to correct you there because he came out, I think it was on The Athletic 2 days ago. Someone interviewed him. He actually said it's not a dead arm, and it's not a nerve thing or anything. It's just like a sprained AC joint in his right shoulder. So
There you go.
I don't know if that's any better or not, any worse. But he hasn't played in a while. I'd be surprised if we really see him much before the playoffs. There's some videos of him shooting before the game, and he looks okay. End of the day, Jrue Holiday's not going to be the guy that wins the Celtics the championship, but he is a valuable, contributor to this team, especially his 3-point shooting in that corner. So
And the defense,
hopefully,
let's not leave that out. You want to put him on the
no,
opposing's best player.
you definitely do. But I mean, we did see last season in the postseason, it didn't stop Jimmy Butler, so you never really know with him. But hopefully, he's back soon. It doesn't look to be too bad. And the Celtics team, I mean, they haven't had their starting five in like 4 weeks, just because they're just resting guys because they can, because that's the luxury they've, been afforded with this massive lead.
Celtics on a one-game losing streak. Let's move on. The Minnesota Timberwolves. They signed 30-year-old veteran TJ Warren. You might remember him from 5 or 6 seasons on the Phoenix Suns, then bounced around the league after an ankle injury. I think he's been on the roster on a couple 10-day contracts. They've locked him in for the rest of the year. Laker rookie Jalen Hood-Schifino. He underwent a lumbar microdiscectomy. I'm assuming he'll miss the rest of the season. I hated that rookie pick, especially when they had. Who's the rookie for Miami that we all love?
Jaime
Oh,
Jaquez,
yeah.
Jaime Jaquez
Jame Harkes.
Jr.
Yeah, I love that pick. He's an LA native. So sorry for Jalen Hood-Schifino fans. DeMantis Sabonis set the longest double-double streak since Wilt Chamberlain, 54 games in a row, overtaking Kevin Love's. Back when he used to be Fat Kevin Love, that's what his nickname was back with the Minnesota Timberwolves. So shout out DeMantis Sabonis. And I just wanted to highlight a couple really strong plays by the Aussies this week in the league. I don't know if you guys caught this as well, but Patty Mills has had a couple good games after a rough start for Miami. He had 10 points and 2 steals in each of Miami's last 2 wins. Josh Giddey's probably had his 2 best games all season. He had 19, 9, and 8 today. I only caught the highlights. But 18 points early in the week when Milwaukee punched them in the mouth, and he was the only competent player on the court in the first half. Jock Landau in the starting center spot for Houston's been all right. He's had 2 17-point games. He had a 7-block game at the end of last week, we spoke briefly about. And Jock Reith, the center for Portland, he had 24 points in a loss against Denver as well. So Aussie's doing good things all around the league. Tom, you look like you want to say something on one of those guys. It was Giddey, wasn't it? Nah.
No, I don't, not really. I think I did see this stat from this angry Miami fan on Twitter that the Mills hit his first like 3 3-pointers in his first game, and he's gone for like 3 for 38 since then, or something like that. But I can't say anything because I know Celtics will end up playing in the first round, and Patty Mills will hit about 5 threes in one game, and we'll go to a game seven because of that. I guarantee it right now.
We just need him to be in rhythm for the Paris Olympics. And then the final news of the week is the scandal with Jontay Porter. Now, this is a Toronto Raptor thing, so let me just lead this off before we get to some riveting discussion. If you're unaware, Jontay Porter is Michael Porter Jr.'s younger brother. He's been given some playing time with the Toronto Raptors this year. I believe he's on a two-way contract worth about $500,000. He's been stood down from the Toronto Raptors by the NBA amid an investigation into potential sports betting irregularities. These are the facts. These are not opinions. So, prop bets, those are the bets involving an individual player, involving Porter specifically from games on January 26th and again on March 20 for the under, are both under investigation. There's increased betting interest on the under for Porter props, which is a bunch of his different stats, as you'd be aware, rebounds, assists, 3-pointers, well above the regular limits that sports book offer punters. So Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN was saying, regular limits depending on your sports book are about $1,000 or $2,000 for these smaller props. They were much larger for Porter on both of these days. And Porter happened to leave these games early due to strange injuries and illnesses. So I think he left 4 minutes into one game for an aggravation of an eye injury, which I was watching that game and the game prior, and I thought that was strange at the time, because I really was rooting for Jonte at the time. And then he left the game on March 20th, I believe it was, with an illness that the club did not elaborate on any further. So again, no indication at this point of wrongdoing, but it's come out in the last couple of days that prior to making the NBA, Jonte had a private Discord where he would sell on a subscription model his bets across other sports. So he's on record betting on NCAA games. Those are the college games, which you're allowed to do. He wasn't in college and he wasn't an NBA player, and giving stock and share advice. So not a great look. The NBA jumped into bed with sports betting agencies, recently, and we all thought this would happen at some level. I just really wanted to touch on it quickly because it's getting into a crowded space, not just in male professional sports, but betting is kind of leaking in to the presentation and to the fiber of all kinds of sports. Just interesting to touch on Tom and Yuri.
It's fishy, isn't it, though, Alex, that a player would walk out, well, basically exit the game, say only playing 5 or 6 minutes with sort of a innocuous injury, if you want to put in that type of context, but it doesn't really add up, though. That's the most sort of telling part to it all, because we've seen, right, with NBA referees over the years, and that particular one with Tim Donaghy and the betting scandal, right, and number of other referees are basically caught under the table in terms of officiating playoff games, which they would extend a game six to a game seven. And even I think comments that just want to put in reference for, bring it back to you, in 2001 with Ray Allen and George Karl when they were the Milwaukee Bucks, and that series against Philadelphia, right, where they criticized the referees because the foul count was about 181 to 126 or something, and the Bucks, those two end up getting a combined fine of 85 grand. So it's those particular just examples which have been sort of circulating around the league for quite some time. And it's sort of, that's the thing though with betting, is that anyone can place a bet, and it almost basically harms the integrity of the sport.
You
And
can
that's not
make
what
an
you want to
argument
be.
for that. It's interesting to get the other perspective. Just sorry to cut you off, but when I had the 101 podcast with Julian Balthazar a couple of weeks ago, we spoke at length about betting. My personal viewpoint, it's not intrinsically a terrible thing, but the way it's being woven into professional sports is a little bit concerning. You've got children growing up, learning the odds, and I bet the over on so and so. So Tom, I'd be interested in your thoughts as well. Interesting space.
Well, yeah, I mean, you sort of said the interesting comment was that it's leaking into the game, which I think it's already in the game. I think it's just completely integrated. I mean, you watch the TNT broadcast, and after the first TV timeout in the first quarter, they cut to the studio with, like,
Charles
Charles Barkley and
Barkley.
Kenny Smith, and they're like, "What do you think? You're going to take the over or the under on points for this player? Or who do you think's going to score more points? You can get this on FanDuel." I mean, they're introducing in League Pass. It probably won't happen in Australia because of the rights and stuff, but over in America, you're going to literally have the betting odds live on the side of the screen as you're watching it. It's completely integrated the game. And a lot of people are saying that this happened in the last few years, but the reality is it's been around for ages. I mean, I remember being a 9-year-old making bets on the school playground with kids, which by the way, Jimmy, if you're listening to this, you still owe me $2. I'm not forgetting about that one. But it's just a
Clip it.
fact. And yeah, it's just what's going to happen, and it's going to keep getting worse and worse and worse. But as long as this stuff doesn't happen, that's where it's fine. You can't have players betting on themselves and doing this sort of stuff, because then the integrity of the game comes into place. What's stopping someone on the Detroit Pistons or the Wizards, who aren't obviously going to do anything, betting a whole heap of money on themselves, or telling other people to bet on themselves to, financially profit off their losing, essentially? The thing is, the betting systems are becoming so smart now. Even in Australia, long story short, some people made a very fishy bet on a Brownlow medal vote last year in the AFL, and straight away the sports bet people sniffed it straight out, and they worked out that there was one umpire who was working and connected with it all, and straight away gone. Like, these betting companies are smarter. It's not like it's the 1980s where you got a bookie. They know exactly who's placing these bets, and if it's weird, they flag it in their system straight away, which this exactly was the situation. I mean, who's betting that kind of money on Porter?
Yeah, you can
Like,
see they've
no
let
one.
it they've let it go once on January 26th, and the second it pops up again in March, they go, okay, this is now a trend. I don't know a lot about baseball, but it's also popping up into that space. Shohei Ohtani, baseball star, and his translator are caught up in some sort of betting scandal. Again, I want to stress at this point in time, there's no proof of any wrongdoing. It's just something that's come up, and maybe we'll all applaud the NBA in a couple of weeks for their, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but their lack of hesitancy and just getting on top of it. Just suspending him, probably with pay, just while they investigate, because it's not a great look. But again, don't know how I move on from this segment. It's worth saying I've been sponsored by betting agencies previously on my own podcast. Like, this is if you're trying to monetize what you do, sometimes this is a risk you take with, again, it's not unscrupulous. These are things that are freely available to consenting adults. But I think we all agree if Jontay Porter's guilty of this lifetime ban.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a bit too much to overcome, right? And especially when you're on a two-way contract as he is, it's just basically puts in the further light as well. He doesn't have that luxury, unlike another player, an experienced player. So
His
maybe, for
brother's on a
example,
max,
DeMar
man.
DeRozan.
His
But
brother's on a
yeah,
max contract
that's
at
the
this
thing.
point. All right, let's
Yeah.
quickly move on until let's just get off that topic. Today's Bucks and Lakers match. I was saying to you guys, I haven't had a chance to look at a single second of this game. So, Yuri, I know you saw the fourth time. I know you at least saw the overtime period. We were talking about it. Talk to us about this game today.
Yeah, so the Bucks got off to a really good start, Alex. They led 32-16 at the end of the first period. Anthony Davis had that big putback dunk at the end of the first, and then really the Bucks translated that whole defense into the second and led 58-42 at intermission. And of course, this is without LeBron James. The Lakers are playing without
We also should
the
mention it
start
went
this.
to double overtime. That's why I'm picking this game out. Yeah.
And of course, this is the start of the Lakers' 6-game road trip. And then it just felt though the third quarter, D'Angelo Russell started to get a few of his shots going. And of course, we live with those nightmares from about 18 days ago when he smoked us for 44 points. He started to get his radar going. Doc wasn't too happy with the missed assignments that the Bucks were giving up, including basically leaking out on the fast break when they should have been securing defensive rebounds. And that became a real issue. And then sort of Dame didn't quite have his lift on his jumper in the fourth quarter, and him and Giannis started to wear out a fair bit as well. And I think Chris, of course, having recently returned from missing the last 5 weeks, that ankle injury sort of was took a while for him to just get adjusted back into the offense. And it felt as though we just couldn't quite put the Lakers away. And even though Bobby had another great game for us, Bobby Portis, it just felt as though the whole play of Anthony Davis was just monstrous once more. D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reaves had his second triple double of his career, right, with 29 points, 14 rebounds, and 10 assists. They just kept hitting big shot after big shot. AD had those two big threes in the last 2 minutes of regulation. And then from there, those overtime periods just felt an absolute grind. It just, possessions weren't easy to come by, too. I think just, if we have, I think there was that one play in regulation with Dame and Giannis. They ran that pick and roll and it sort of broke up a bit as well. And then that drive to the rim and just couldn't get anything going. And then in overtime, right, Anthony Davis lays that big block to send it to double over to double OT on Dame's drive to the rim. And then I think the first, was it 4 minutes of double OT? Both teams combined to go without a field goal, 10 straight possessions. And it was just
Jeez.
absolutely crazy to think about it. And then ultimately, it comes down to the last minute, as Tom mentioned earlier in the show. And it was just absolutely a wild game, one bit. And Austin Reaves hits that big three from the left wing. I think it was a big three, too, in the context of it as well, to put the Lakers ahead by three. And then Dame misses a jumper, I'm pretty sure. And then
So I just
I
want to
think
get to the
eight, no,
reason why I wanted to
yeah.
highlight this game. So I was out all day, didn't get a chance to watch basketball. Come back and saw the discourses. You need to watch, this game. It was incredible. The first time the Lakers led in this game was 3 minutes into the first overtime period. So Milwaukee were up by, 15 to 20 multiple times, including in the fourth quarter. They had, I think it was an 18-point lead. It just highlights how frustrating to me both of these teams are this year. Like we've spoken, especially you've spoken a lot, Yuri, about Milwaukee's early struggles, then getting rid of their new head coach and getting, a seasoned coach in Doc, and how I don't believe in Doc Rivers and he slowly fixes the transition defense. I mean, Milwaukee's fast break points to Los Angeles today, I'm just looking at it, 27 to 8. Absolutely ridiculous. But when you think about it, for the Lakers, Anthony Davis isn't running the floor. LeBron James is 57 years old. Like, who else have they really got going? I don't know what to think about either of these teams because I watched Milwaukee punch Oklahoma in the face a couple of days ago in one of the most impressive third quarter beatdowns I've seen in years. And the Los Angeles Lakers have Anthony Davis, who's having the best year of his career, should be an MVP candidate if we're being completely honest. LeBron James, who's still quite good for a 39-year-old, and they're getting really decent versions of Austin Reaves and D'Angelo Russell at the back end of the season, but they've got holes through the rest of the roster. Tom, I don't know which one of these teams is better. I don't know if that matters anything at the moment because they're both in strange places. The Lakers ninth in the West. I think Milwaukee is still second in the East for somehow, right? What's going on, Tom?
Yeah, they're still second. They should finish second, you'd think. It was a bit of a curious one because they were up 19 in the fourth quarter. It kind of seemed like they were going to put the Lakers away. I mean, at one point, I kind of just figured the game was over because it was still a double digit lead, and I went, "I'm going to go get lunch before the next game starts." And when I came back, all of a sudden it was a 5-point lead, and the game was back on. But toward the end of the game, they drew up a really nice play off the inbounds with about 2 seconds left. Got Giannis a layup right at the rim, and he missed that, which I was really shocked by. But again, at the same time, he has had a tendency in the playoffs in late game situations to sort of get a little bit short with those layups. I don't know if that's a fatigue thing, but it's just what happened. And then Anthony Davis, that's probably one of the best games of his career, I reckon I've seen, especially on the defensive end. He was just protecting that rim like his life depended on it. He blocked Dame several times, and one of them actually ended up leading to Dame hitting a clutch three because the ball got sent back out. But he was still just unbelievable. And then again at the end, the Lakers got up three with that Reeves three at the end of the double overtime, and then Giannis got fouled on his way to the bucket, and he went to the line for two with 24.3 seconds. Which if he makes both of them, it's a 1-point game. Anything can happen. It's a free throw game after that. But he missed them both, and it's stuff like that that 3 4 years ago we looked at and went, if he does this in the playoffs, we're in strife. But he sort of put those doubts away again in that final series, especially in that game six when he had, what, 18 free throws or 20 free throws or something ridiculous. But now it sort of crept back into his game. And then, I watched the Bucks against the Celtics last week without Giannis, and I kind of just felt like that was one of Damian Lillard's most impressive performances. I mean, he started off pretty poorly, but then he got into a groove. And I don't know. I'm yet to really see Lillard and Giannis put it together against a really good team for 4 quarters. I've seen, Lillard throw punches and then Giannis throw punches and they sort of go back and forth, but I've never really seen them do it together. And it kind of does remind me of the early days of Tatum and Brown when they first took over Boston, because the discord there was they can't stick together. They're not meant to be able to play together because they're too similar, which obviously Lillard and Giannis aren't. But the difference is Lillard and Giannis have both spent, what, the last like 7 years of their career being the number one guy. Now all of a sudden they kind of haven't learned yet that they can depend on the other guy, but also they still need to get their own at the same time. And so it's just a bit interesting to see how it goes. But the Bucks are just so hard to get a read on because they have a really nice stretch followed by like three really poor losses where you kind of go, wow, like they got blown out against the Kings the other day, and you kind of go, ugh. And then, Giannis doesn't play against the Celtics, and so really, I doubt we're going to get to see both those teams go at full strength since, November was the last time that they went with each other without, any back-to-backs or any injuries or anything. So we probably won't see that until the conference finals if they are to meet there. But look, end of the day, I kind of want to ask this question because I'm really curious about it. I saw my Celtics yesterday blow a 30-point lead. I'm seeing teams just
Fifth
blow
biggest
leads
blown
all
lead
the
in
time.
history. We haven't mentioned that yet. The fifth biggest blown lead in NBA
Yeah.
history.
And today the Bucks are up by about 20 in the first half. And at no point was I like, I'm changing this game to the Thunder Pelicans one, because I'm like, I know that the other team's going to make a run. And it's just, I don't know. At this point, there are times where I've seen my Celtics against it was against Detroit, but we were down 20 against Detroit at halftime. I was sitting there at halftime going, I'm still confident in this game. Whereas even with Atlanta missing all half their bloody team, I was sitting there going, I'm not confident until that final buzzer goes. Even when we were against Golden State, we're up by 50. I'm like, I'm not confident until they pull all their starters. Would you guys rather be up 20 at halftime or down 20 in an NBA game?
Oh, while I think about it, I'll tell you what. Last night in our grand final, we were up eight in the last corner, and I was confident because nobody's hitting threes in the lowest division in Townsville. Tell you that much. An 8-point lead is as good as gold. I think I'd
I mean,
rather be up. I think I'd rather be down 20. Let's be honest. It's a mentality thing.
I think rather be up 20, to be honest, and then just, of course, I think the reason why is too because you can almost rest on your laurels a little bit too, but at the same time, you almost have this voice in your head as well that says to continue playing defense as well, no matter whether teams missed five or six threes in a row or they're hitting three or fourth triples in a row. It's sort of that sort of mentality in a way as well in regards to that. But we've seen right the 2002 conference finals between the Celtics and New Jersey Nets when the Nets gave up a 26-point lead in game three, just one of those examples.
We it's well, this is a lovely segue, but it's time for my favorite part of the show every week where I throw to Tom Dev, who I've not prepared to send us to the break. Take it
Well,
away,
look,
Tom.
I feel like hypothetically we are up 20 at the moment. So we'll see if we can hold this lead in the second half of the show. And so, hopefully you guys are back listening too and see what happens.
Have blown a 20-point lead this year, so maybe let's try not to bomb the second half. Right, see you on the other side. All right, back from the break. Just during the break, I tried to look at the last time two players had 20 rebounds and 20 points in the same game. If you look at the box score, because I haven't seen a second of this game, Anthony Davis, 34 points, 23 rebounds. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 29 points, 21 rebounds. I think the last time was Anthony Davis against Kevon Looney 10 months ago in the playoffs, or maybe the play-in. But before that, I can't find a record of that happening except for Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell. So that might be something that doesn't happen too often. I thought I'd leave you to ponder that. All right, moving on to the Houston Rockets. I wasn't sure if you wanted to take this one away, Tom, given your love for Ime Udoka, the head coach of the Rockets. That was kind of a sarcastic statement. As of today, the Houston Rockets are one game back from the Warriors in 11th, just in the Western Conference. They're just there, back of a 9-game win streak, the longest in the league. They've won 11 of their last 12. That's with no Elper and Şengün out, probably for the season. No Cam Whitmore for the next few weeks, and Tari Eason's gone for the season as well. That 9-game win streak is their longest in 5 years in this rebuilding phase. And it's really on the back of Jalen Green's ascension from the All-Star break. He averages nearly 28 points per game in March. That's the fourth best in the league in March. 51% shooting. With no Alpi, they can play Jabari Smith Jr. as a stretch five, and they play Jock Landale, who's the ultimate professional. And I like just bringing up that I have his NBA player agent in my contacts. Tom, what's going on with Houston? Are they for real? Can they make a threat? Can they beat the Lakers in the play-in? That means they'd have a first-round matchup with a hell of a team in either the Denver Nuggets or the Memphis, not Memphis Grizzlies. What am I talking about? The Minnesota Timberwolves or the Oklahoma City Thunder. Too many interesting things to pick out here.
Look, they can definitely make a charge for the play-in. I don't really see them making the playoffs. I mean, they have to go through a Lakers team or a Golden State team, and then have to go through what, a Phoenix or someone like that. I think they'd struggle
You don't think
to get through that.
against Phoenix with no actual center and the Kings the most confusing team in the league? You don't think there's a little bit of wiggle room there?
There's some, but I still think it's a bit of a stretch. But like, look, like you said, I can sort of talk on the Ime Udoka experience. I mean, really, if you haven't worked out now, I mean, he was just the face of that 22 finals run. It was really Joe Mazzulla in the back bench. He was the brains of that
Second row,
organization.
Joe.
Second row Joe, front guy now. But no, look, Udoka's a great coach. There was no doubting that. And we saw that in his 1 year in Boston. And look, obviously this Houston team is nowhere near as talented as what he had at the Celtics. But the difference is he can change his sort of style off the court. And well, actually, I say change. He hasn't really. He's sort of done the same thing. He's held them to the same professional standards that he did a championship caliber roster. And he holds guys accountable. And he's not afraid to, sit guys on the bench and say, you're not doing the job. Especially on the defensive end, he's more cautious of what's going on that end than the offensive end. If he has to win a game 98 to 99, he's happy with that. If he keeps the other team under 100, he's happy. And I mean, it's crazy because, like you said, Jalen Green's gone off lately. He wasn't closing games like a month or two ago, and the rumors were he was ready to be traded to Brooklyn. I mean, apparently Houston called up Brooklyn and said, we'll give you Green and a couple first round picks back for, for Mikal Bridges.
Can I interject for 10 seconds? I've been lambasted on this podcast the last several weeks for suggesting that Brooklyn should move that franchise to Las Vegas. And who else should mention it this week but Bill Simmons on the biggest basketball podcast in the world? So call me a visionary, but continue.
Look, I wouldn't completely disagree with it. Although, look, having just been there, Brooklyn's a cool place. Their fans suck and their team sucks, and it's just they need a better team. And I mean, look, the place was popping when Durant and Kyrie and Harden were there, and that playoff series against Milwaukee, the place was going nuts. But I mean, again, they're back in a rebuilding phase. But no, look, Green was nearly traded, and now he's arguably been one of the best players to close out the season the last month. Their defense has just completely timed up. And when Şengün went down in that wheelchair, I thought for sure their defense would fall because he's, such a great rim protector, and he's just so good on that end. Nah, it's anything that's gotten better. And It's kind of like a, you know, we've got the play in now, which is really great. And now it kind of feels like, because of the way the schedule's gone, on April 5th, it's Rockets against the Warriors, which is kind of like, feels like it might be a play in for the play in. So that, let me tell you, 6 months ago, if you told me that I'd be trying to block off my calendar for a Warriors versus Rockets game, I would have laughed at you. But now I'm going to be the first person watching it. So who knows? Can I see them getting there? Definitely. The way the Warriors are playing at the moment, 100%.
Yeah, that's a whole nother thing. Yuri, talk to us about the last six games of Jalen Green.
Yeah, it's been absolutely one hell of an offensive output, hasn't it, Alex, these last six games during the Rockets' nine-game winning streak. He's been averaging 33.2 points per game, shooting about 52% from the floor and 47% from three-point land. And I think when you look at his shot selection, that's been the most evident changing of his offensive game, right? Before, he used to take really tough and absurdly crazy jumpers, turnarounds, tough contested one-on-ones, 20 feet out. But now he's reading the play better, I think. And we saw that against Portland and was able to watch the first half of that game. And it was a brilliant step back three that he made over, I can't remember which Trailblazers player, but it's those type of offensive plays where he's just in the flow and it's not as though he's feeling rushed with his offense. And even I think this is a good thing as well with Houston. And Jock Landau, even though he's not the same elite passer as Sengun, he is a willing passer. And he did that same thing as well when he was with Melbourne United here in the NBL. He loves to operate from the top and get his cutting teammates to the basket. And he did that quite a few times with Jalen Green. There was one play there where Green received a handoff from the top and just dribbled, took a couple of dribbles into the mid-range and pulled up and made a jumper. It's those just type of simple plays which are really helping Jalen ascend his game and the Rockets to that extent as well. And I think when you look at it as well, and Tom's already nailed all of it on the head, is their final 11 games of regular season, seven of those 11 are away from home. And their record's what, 10 and 24 away from the Toyota Center? And they've at least started to win some away games, right? They're about what, 5 and 23 or something on the road about a month ago. So they've managed to rectify that part. But this is now the trickiest section, with those remaining away games, and including, I think, ones against Dallas on April 7. There's an away game against Minnesota there too. And I think their final three games are away as well too, Alex, against Portland, Utah, and the Clippers to finish off the regular season. So they've just got to keep banking those away wins as much as they can. And I think also Tom also pointed this about Ime Udoka too with Jalen Green. There came to a point in, I think, December, right? There was, I think, two games in a row, one against the Spurs on December 11, which Jalen only played, I think, about 24 minutes in that game. And I think it was only 2 of 10 from the field. And Udoka basically didn't play him for the final, what, 6 or 7 minutes of that contest. And he basically just held into account and said, Jalen needs to play more better on the defensive end. And he's taken on that challenge head on, right, in this last basically handful of weeks. And you will have said that at the start of the season with Jalen Green being, oh, he's a all right to solid defender enough as he is. But yeah, it's a very, yeah, just very good progression from the Rockets from where they were at 27-35 to where they currently sit now. But the other part to it as well, Golden State holds a tiebreaker over Houston, having won both contests with that final game on April 4 back in at the Toyota Center.
From one exciting team in the West to another, I wanted to talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are 50-21. Their expected win loss record this year was 44, and I stood on business at the start of the year and said I'm not going to be surprised if this team wins 50. I just wanted to read their roster out and then kind of have a discussion about if they've overperformed expectations and if they can continue to do so. So you look at this is their list of guys who've played the most games. I just got to make sure I filter that by the right column again. Chet Holmgren, the rookie, has played 71 games. He's played every game, string bean Chet Holmgren. So shout out, Chet. You've got another rookie in Cason Wallace, who's played all 71 games. You've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who I was my pick for MVP, but has started to have a couple of bad games towards the end of the season. Top three player in the league, top five, if you want to make an argument. Josh Giddey, who is an interesting player. I think he's got a tool set to be really impactful for another decade, but far from proven and needs to improve the three-point shot. Got some problems. Lugans Dort, a really good 3-and-D guy who's just shooting above league average. He's, again, he probably doesn't start on a lot of teams in the league. Then going down the list, you've got Isaiah Joe, super streaky shooter who can shoot you in and out of games. Aaron Wiggins, Jalen Williams, who I believe is a superstar in his second year already. We can just lock that in. You got the other Jalen Williams, who's not as good. You've got guys like Lindy Waters, Usman Jang, Vasilije Miočić, I got rid of, Davis Bertans. Oliver Saar is the older brother of Alex Saar, the projected number one pick this year. Mike Muscala, Bismack Biyombo. Where's your vets on this team? Who's leading the way? I know.
Well, that was the aim with Gordon Hayward, and it has not worked out so far.
That's why I skipped him on purpose. Look, I get that the team's taken on the mentality of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but I think they've got the youngest coach in the league, if not one of the youngest, in Mark Daniels. He's 38, I believe. That's barely older than I am, which is makes me feel terrible. There is so much talent on this team, and it's clear they've overperformed expectations, but can they live up to it this postseason? What do they do in the offseason? Do they just go try and trade to get Steven Adams or a big man just for some veteran presence in the locker room? Tom, I'm really interested in your thoughts.
Well, yeah, look, I'll get to the offseason in a minute. But when you say perform, outperform their expectations, they've definitely outperformed their preseason expectations. But I think because of the length of the NBA season, expectations can quickly change. And within about 2 months, I think we worked out that this team was no longer young and upcoming. They were, okay, they are legitimate. They are ready to start competing now. Now, look, come playoff time, I have my doubts. I think they're probably going to get knocked out in a second round just because of experience. I mean, SGA's only really had that one playoff series against the Warriors in, what, 2019? Since then, he's just been on this rebuilding team. Don't get me wrong, he was nice in the bubble, but that was a while ago as well, and he had Chris Paul there. I mean, ironically, Al Horford could have actually been quite a big help to them, which they traded back to the Celtics for peanuts. But because of his contract, none of this would have ever really worked out in the end anyway. So you can't really say that they should have kept him. But look, big men are still their Achilles heel. I mean, Chet, he's just too skinny to deal with players like Giannis, Davis, Embiid, and et cetera. I mean, put it this way, if OKC do make it to the finals, they better hope that the Bucks aren't waiting there, because otherwise I think Giannis generally might average 40 and 20. If they get the Lakers in the first round, I'm actually worried. I might generally consider picking the Lakers over them purely because of what Davis can do to them. But if they get the Kings or the Suns, I have faith in the Thunder to get through that first round. And then, you know, in the offseason, they got to start using these draft assets. You know, you have to think they're not going to bring Hayward back. But that's sort of the sneaky thing about this Hayward trade, is they got him in because they can use that expiring contract, because he's off the books at the end of this year. Whereas I think Bertans, they had another year to run. So now they've got cap space. And the player that I think they should go out and sign is Nick Claxton. Because you look at the other big men on the free agency market, and it's pretty ugly. It's Jonas Valanciunas, and then it's pretty ugly after that. I don't think the Nets are going to want to keep him on a mid to high salary, because they know that they're not going to compete in his timeline. Whereas Claxton, he's about 26, I think. He fits their age demographic. He can play off the bench. He can play off a starter. And then, you know, you just build around SGA, Jalen Williams, and Chet. You know, they already have nice pieces around them. Josh Giddey seems to have put everything that happened a few months ago behind him, and now he's starting to hit some threes.
Yeah,
teams are still going to leave him open.
Yep. He got left open the other game against Milwaukee, and I think made 3 out of 4 in the first half or something close to that.
Yeah, I think he made like 5 today or something like that. He's making his threes. I mean,
and he made him in the FIBA World Cup too. Like he would make him in FIBA when they just left him. So it's like he's got it. It's just a bit streaky, that's all.
Yeah. Look, I still this I think the difficult thing about the West is it's sort of like you got Denver on this one tier, and then you got the Timberwolves, and you got OKC, where you're kind of like, they've been nice during the regular season, but do we have faith in them in the playoffs? And you got the Clippers and the Pelicans, who you just don't really know. And then the rest are all like, oh, we don't want to play them. Like, you don't want to play the Mavs or the Suns or the Lakers or the Warriors, or if the Rockets make it, the Rockets. Like, you don't really want to play them. But at the same time, you'd rather probably take them based off this season than those top tier teams. But end of the day, I think OKC are legit. But by legit, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they make it to the conference finals, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they get knocked out in the first round.
Yuri, I want to hear your thoughts. So we covered a lot of that there, Tom. Big man on the Nuggets that I'd be afraid of, but the Clippers ain't got nobody good. Pelicans, JV could probably take it to him. Isn't a scoring big, but could probably take it to him inside. Timberwolves might not have catbacks. That means you're relying on Naz Reid to do damage, which I love Naz, or Rudy Gobert, who's actually having not a bad season offensively. I think they match up well against the Mavericks because they've got those rim-running centers like the rookie that his name's escaped me.
Derek
Derek
Lively.
Lively, so I think that's an interesting matchup. Like, you can't rule the Thunder out, but Yuri, where do you sit?
Yeah, just having a look at the season series that they've played against the Dallas Mavericks, the Sacramento Kings, and the Phoenix Suns. So OKC's won 2 of 3 against Phoenix, and their third and final meeting is in a couple of days' time back in OKC. They've won 2 of 3 against Dallas, and Sacramento have won 2 of 3 against the Thunder. I think in terms of rebounding wise, you'd rather play Phoenix, in all honesty, in that first round. If you're OKC, unless of course with the Suns and having Yusuf Nurkic, who basically swallowed up every single rebound last time the teams played on March 3, where he secured what 31 rebounds, and that was the first 30 rebound game since what Dwight Howard and Kevin Love back in the day, and I think the first quarter 12 of those 31 were rebounds. Where yeah, rebounds should I say in that first quarter? But yeah, I think if you're OKC, you'd definitely look at Phoenix has been their first round opponent, just not only because the big names with Beal, Booker, and Durant, but because defensively they've exposed them twice already, as it is the Thunder. And especially, was it, they had that big lead. I think it was a 24-point lead, although Phoenix were able to cut it back, but it didn't really matter too much. If you're Sacramento and playing them, I think definitely the Kings sort of, was it motion offense too, with Sabonis operating from the top, can definitely cause them a lot of trouble. That's why I believe in OKC with Mark Dadnot, love to run a number of screens and free up their shooters, because most of their shooters shoot over 40% from downtown. So I think that'd be a fit for the Kings to play against OKC. And as with Dallas too, it's an interesting one though with that, Alex, because the Mavericks have been operating more with a bigger lineup, with having Maxi Kleber playing more power forward and either Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford chopping and changing at that center spot. So that'd be a really interesting one too, because I think the Mavs have beefed up a lot more defensively. They've brought back Derek Jones Jr. into the starting lineup as well, and having, of course, Kyrie and Luka in the backcourt. And yeah, that'd be a really intriguing matchup against the Mavs. And we've already seen, well, one brilliant game, right? The team's first meeting back on December 2nd, which the Mavs basically, what, almost came back from that 30-point margin and stole that game against the Thunder at home, which was a pretty absurd contest. But yeah, just to, in final conclusion with that, it would have to be Phoenix if you're OKC and looking to play in that first round.
How much do you want to keep talking about the scramble for sixth in the West? So we've got Dallas, Sacramento, and Phoenix, or the Clippers theoretically could keep falling. This is such an interesting bunch of teams because the Suns, you all know my rule, I'm just not watching them until the NBA playoffs. The Kings are the most confusing team in the league. They'll have two good wins. I'll like, all right, I'll watch the next Kings game, and they get blown out by 25 in the first half. Dallas strike me as a team that should be better than they are, but they're on a real roll with Daniel Gafford. So there's a stat I've got. It's the only stat I've got prepared for this segment. When Luka and Daniel Gafford start, the Mavs are 11 and 0. Really good moves at the deadline. So Tom, this is such an interesting race to watch at the end of the year. Maybe the best one we've had in quite a while. Do you have any particular thoughts we haven't hit so far?
Well, I don't know about you guys. I don't know if you've actually looked at the Suns' schedule to close out the season. I hadn't until preparing for the show today. My God, it is a gauntlet. Like, we're gonna find out if this Suns team is legit or not. So this is their final 10 games to close out the season. They're at Denver, then they're at the
Oh my
Thunder,
God, I'm just
at
looking at it.
Pelicans, Cavs, Timberwolves, Pelicans, Clippers, at Kings, at Timberwolves. So they are all playoff teams. They are all quality playoff teams. They're not even like this scrounging down the bottom. Put it this way, if they go 0-10, I'm not going to be shocked. If they go 10-0, I'm not going to be shocked. If they go 5-5, I wouldn't be shocked. I don't know what this Suns team can do. They lost to the Spurs the other day without Wemby playing. It's just so interesting. And the thing is, with some of these other teams, you can kind of be like, okay, sure, we'll give them a pass for this season. But feels like the Suns are all in. I mean, they've got Beal on this $52 million contract. I mean, I went over this last week, so I won't go over too much again. But Durant's getting older. Booker's just kind of there at the moment. He has a month where he looks like he could be a top five MVP guy, and then he has 2 months where it's like, oh, I forgot Booker's really like a genuine star. And I don't know what the Suns team's gonna do. I could see them making the conference finals, and I can see them not even making the playoffs at this rate. Whereas the Mavs, are interesting. They have one good week, then one bad week, then one good week, then one bad week. And, as we're doing a weekly show, that makes it really hard to talk on them because you say one thing about them one week and then it's completely different. I mean, Luka didn't even play in the fourth today against the Kings and he finished with 28, 11, and 6. Like, if he can do that in the playoffs, they should make it to the conference finals again. But I don't think they can win with one guy. But, to summarize, if I'm picking out of Dallas, Sacramento, and Phoenix to finish sixth, I'm going Dallas.
Yuri, just before I'll let you jump in a sec, I'm on tankathon.com, so that's how we find out the strength of schedule. Every team has got listed their toughest remaining opponents and their easiest remaining opponents, and there's teams in both columns. The Phoenix Suns are the only team with no easy opponents remaining. They've got tough outs the rest go. Also worth noting, Sacramento, third toughest remaining strength of schedule as well.
The one thing that doesn't fit Phoenix and doesn't suit them, should I say, Alex, is they don't hold the tiebreakers over the Kings and the Mavs as well. And that's doesn't really bid well in their favor if they end up having all three having the same record together at regular season's end. So, yeah,
Do they have it over the
it's very
Lakers?
pickly. They don't. The Lakers won 3 of 5
Okay.
during the
Thank you.
regular season
That's
because they
very
had that one
helpful.
extra one because the in-season
Yeah.
tournament, what, semi-final in early December?
Very helpful. All right. Well, let's move on to performance of the week as we get near the end of the show. And then, Yuri, you've got a quick quiz for us as well. Yuri, your performance of the week is what?
Dante DiVincenzo's career-high 40 points against the Detroit Pistons. And right from the early bat, man, those threes were flying out of his hand as though they were beach balls. And it was just pretty majestical to watch one bit because in Milwaukee, we saw glimpses of his three-point shooting. And he's always been a great three-point shooter throughout his career. But when you have, of course, Giannis and Chris there being the main offensive threats, he sort of really took a back seat in that way too. Not many players were drawn from him, which Coach Mark Budenholzer didn't really implement too much for him. But since when he joined the Warriors, right, his offensive game went to another level. And then this season, especially these last couple of months, Alex, especially with Julius Randle still nursing a dislocated shoulder, he hasn't played in exactly what a couple of months. And Jalen Brunson, of course, opposition teams are paying more attention to him and throwing a few more double teams his way and hard shows and all that. His offensive load has just absolutely skyrocketed. And even last month, he averaged what, 21.8 points per game. This month, he's averaging close to 20.
Did he really?
And yeah,
Have
this
I missed
month
that? Yeah,
alone,
right.
yep. Since that game against Charlotte in late January, which he scored 28 points, he's basically been on an absolute heater. And the Pistons, though, were just, yeah, it's Detroit, though. Unfortunately, it's Swiss cheese defense with them. There was one play there in the second, Alex, where Evan Fournier was supposed to be on him. And he goes to help on the double team down low. And you just look at that play and you're thinking, why have you gone to help when there's no help required, mate? You've got to keep it on the perimeter. And he didn't do that. And DiVincenzo made him pay and knocked down one of his franchise record 11 threes, which broke the record set by, guess who? Evan Fournier in January 2022 against the Boston Celtics and J.R. Smith as well about a decade ago. So that's a big feat too. And one that's definitely in the Knicks' arsenal when it comes to the playoffs and having not just Randle and Brunson shouldering the offensive load and OG Anunoby, who's a pretty dependable scorer too, especially from those corner threes. But Dante's game was just absolutely one to behold as well. And he joins both Jalen and Julius this season to score 40 points, which Brunson's already done that 7 times.
I've got a theory that regular panelist Jack Brophy isn't actually busy with VFL commentating when he can't come on these shows. It's just bad weeks for the Pistons. He's like, I can't do it, boys. I can't do it this week. Tom, your performance of the week is.
Yeah, I was shocked when I opened up the doc today and didn't see Jury's name next to this one. I thought for sure he was going to take this one, but I've got Giannis against the Thunder. 30 points, 19 rebounds, 4 assists, all in 34 minutes, 13 of 18 from the field. He threw a very hard punch at the Thunder team, and they did not punch back. And look, I think at the end of Giannis's career, we're probably going to look at like a 6, 7 year run and go, how did he only win two MVPs? But then we'll also look at someone called Jokic and go, that's how. But he's generally making a case. I think if the Bucks had probably been a better team throughout the whole season, he'd probably be the front runner.
Look, the most impressive part of that win is you just read off his stat line there. The Milwaukee Bucks won that game with defense, and Dame Lillard had an off shooting night. I can't say enough about that performance. That was really good. My performance of the week is tied between three. I've got Jeremy Sochan's 26 points, 18 rebounds in the San Antonio win over the Phoenix Suns without Victor Wembanyama. Put some respect on Jeremy Sochan's name. His career game, he's not always that good, but we'll give him that. Anthony Davis, 36 points, 16 rebounds in a really good win over the Indiana Pacers, who refused to go away, 150 to 145. That was the most points the Lakers have scored since, I think, 1986, I wrote on my daily show. And Zion Williamson, 36 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals without Brandon Ingram. Zion's been, we don't talk enough about Zion. He's frightening. Could you imagine playing
Well,
against him?
it's because every time anyone talks about Zion, he goes and gets injured like
Hey,
2 days later.
touch wood. Tommy, you're touching wood. I can see the desk.
I'm touching
Yuri, pan the camera around. I need you to touch some wood. We cannot be doing that ahead of the Western Conference Finals. Oh my God. Yuri, what's your quiz? And then send us home.
So we saw today, right, with the Lakers and Bucks, which went to double overtime, and that's one of how many double overtime games have we seen this season?
Oh, geez. Tom, I'll let you guess first.
Let's take a stab in the dark. I'll say three.
Oh, that's what I was going to guess. I'll pick the over because I'm sure I've missed one, so I'll go four.
The answer is seven.
Oh, Jesus.
Seven. Seven double overtimes this season. And the
Oh.
Lakers have featured, I think, in a couple of those as well. One against Golden State in late January, which they won 145 to 144.
See, we have a really solid show and we think we're good. And then there's moments like this that just humble us and remind us why we don't get paid to do this. Thank you very much, Yuri Bilsich. Thank you very much, Tom Dev. Have we missed anything? Is there anything else we need to speak on?
Oh, Zion too, about playing the point forward role too in the last month, and his whole changing of the offense for the Pelicans, and one that's absolutely catapulted the Pelicans to where they are in the West fourth seed.
I'll just bring my paper trophy I got last night for the finals MVP. For the listeners, it's a plastic cup that says I am the MVP of 2024. Lots of champagne was drunk out of that in the car park last night. Tom, anything else?
No, I think that's about it. We've covered a lot, and who knows what these final 2 weeks hold, but all I can say is I just cannot wait for these playoffs to get started.
Oh, it's going to be so great, isn't it? If you're still here, you owe us a 5-star review. We need to get back above Thanasis Antetokounmpo's podcast in the Australian charts. That is an insult to us, not to Thanasis. That is an insult to us if we are not above Thanasis. Thank you very much. I've been Alexander J. That's been Yuri and Tom, and we'll see you next Wednesday for daily. Oh, what's our show called? I went straight into my own show. Okay, we're getting 4-star reviews now. We're knocking that down. Oh my God. Thank you for joining us on the Mojo Sports Network.
Cheers, Alex.
Thanks, guys.
So I just cut that whole last segment. God.
Things happen.